Welcome back. Episode 24 of Get a Grip on Lighting. Now, you all know that this is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Well, there was a time that NAILD wasn't really an educational organization. We're talking the late 90s, until the guest on this episode got into NAILD. His name is Paul Hafner. And you may recognize the voice if you're listening to this show, because Paul Hafner is the voiceover on LS1 and LS2. That's right. Paul Hafner designed, built, deployed, and maintained those fantastic educational programs for this association. He's also got a special place in the heart of Greg and I, because when we were new to this business, it was Paul Hafner that really inspired us to step up, get educated, and learn more about lighting. So Paul, thanks for coming on the show. You've always been an inspiration to us and everybody at NAILD, and this is one of our favorite podcasts ever. So thanks, Paul, for coming on the show. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Lumax Lighting. That's L-U-M-A-X lighting.com, man. Lumax Lighting is an independent, family-owned and operated lighting fixture manufacturer. We're talking high quality. Want standard? You got standard. You got custom, architectural, industrial, commercial, and institutional LED fixtures. Since 1976, man, in Altoona, Pennsylvania, they've delivered cost-effective and specialized solutions to suit almost any interior lighting project. They do offices, classrooms, retail, government, hospitals, factories, sports facilities, and warehouse spaces. Scotty, throw that Lumax Lighting website up on for the YouTube viewers. I just went quickly to their website before the ad read here, which was written for me, but I really love the look of that Air LED, man. That's one swanky indirect recessed luminaire. Just look at that, baby. That's real nice looking. They support local labor, local suppliers. Okay, so they're made in the USA with US parts and US labor. And to the fullest extent, they do in-house design, engineering, and then their factory team builds these things, man, from the metal fabrication, painting, assembly, everything. The grassroots approach, they're the people, man, the US people making US fixtures, combined with highly energy efficient fixtures, makes choosing Lumax lighting products the most sustainable choice, man. They're DLC, they check all the boxes, made in the USA. Go to lumaxlighting.com. That's LumaxLighting.com, man, lumaxlighting.com. And remember, this podcast and every podcast is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, that's nailed.org, and listen to Paul Hafner. Episode 24, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Paul Hafner.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here. How you doing, Greg?
Good. Good to see you, Paul. Appreciate you coming on.
Good to be seen, Michael.
All right. You know what? He's a natural. I didn't even ask him. I didn't even have to ask him to say hi to you, Greg.
That's a natural. The first time in 23 of them. Yeah.
23. You know what's interesting? So Paul Hafner is the creator of LS1 and LS2. And we've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. Paul, how long have you been in the lighting business?
At least 30 years.
At least. And, you know, over that time period, how many transitions have you seen? And then an adjunct to that question, what's this LED transition like and how is it different?
Well, first of all, I'd say that what we experienced up until 2008 was a slow churn. You had advances in HID from mercury vapor to metal halide to high pressure sodium to ceramic discharge metal halide. But those were over periods of decades. The same thing happened with fluorescent. We went from preheat and pre-start fluorescence, T12s, then T8s, then T5s, and then high performance T8s, high phosphor color rendering situations. So, but these things were done over decades. Then in 2008, we had the first commercially viable solid state lighting where we could have an actual viable light source produced by solid state lighting. But imagine now, in one decade, we've gone from solid state lighting that was maybe 30 lumens per watt to now, what are we up to? 200 lumens per watt, or some of them higher. So a lot has changed in a very, very quick time. So I'd say that the difference between traditional lighting sources and solid state lighting sources is how rapidly solid state lighting has grabbed hold of the market and transformed it, changed it, made it into something brand new.
Would you consider that being for the good or for the bad?
Oh, I definitely think it's for the good, because what's happened is now we're finally, we're moving away, I think, from trying to make solid state lighting that looked like the old light sources. And we're finally emerging with new solid state lighting that takes advantage of the small size, high lumens per watt, and really good color that can be delivered by solid state lighting. And that's reduced our energy consumption by, in many cases, 70 and 75% of what we were using when we were using traditional lighting sources.
What's your favorite light source?
My favorite light source?
I'm going to say CDM metal halide.
Well, let me just say that's the first thing that rolls off of my tongue for certain types of applications where HID in ceramic discharge metal halide might still be the light source of choice. But even this is changing rapidly because of how good we're getting at creating high color rendering sources in solid state lighting, and at the lumens per watt that we have. We have a smaller driver, we have a smaller set of a chipset, we have longer life, we have better lumen maintenance. All of these things are taking place even against what I consider to be one of the best sources on the HID side, ceramic discharge metal halide. The competition for solid state lighting is still fluorescent. It's still an inexpensive light source, and it's going to take a little longer, I think, for fluorescent to be displaced by solid state lighting. But it's going to happen. It's not a question of if, it's when.
When you say we, you say we a lot, actually. I've always found that interesting. When I would go to a Nailed convention, whenever Paul Hafner was speaking, he was always dragging me into the greater lighting business with the wheeze. And I always felt like I'm an independent lighting distributor, Paul. And who do you mean by we? I think that's a fair question.
Sure. Well, we is all of us who are practicing lighting professionals. We don't have a singular stage here. It isn't like there's a distributor over there who has his own lighting thing. You're participating in a greater piece of the pie. That pie is the ability to produce light that supports people's ability to perform visual tasks. Think about that. That's what we're doing. That's what we do. And we share in the knowledge from the science side, those guys who made the first LED chips or the first incandescent light bulbs, you know, the British, and then Edison gets credit for it, and yada, yada, you know the story. So this is us. We are a part of this. It's not just a business here or a business there. There are people like PhD Lighting Sciences, Kevin Hauser, who gets all of these ideas about how lighting affects the visual performance system. You get Dr. Brainerd, who identifies the non-visual photoreceptor, and we find out about the effect lighting has on our circadian rhythms and our ability, our sleep cycles, and how it's affecting people with Alzheimer's. I mean, the we is this enormous field of professionals, all who contribute something wonderful to this profession we call light and lighting.
How did you get your start in lighting, Paul?
very accidentally. I was working for a company that was selling building control energy management systems, and we would do we would go and do this with HVAC systems, basically adapting to the temperature outside and using all of these more sophisticated algorithms to control the amount of energy we used and when we turned things on and when we turned things off. And one day I saw this article in a magazine for a specular reflector. It was from a company out in California. And to make a long story short, the engineer I was working with on the HVAC systems, he said, you know, we can make those if we get a break in here. And we got a metal break in and we've got some specular aluminum. And he wrote a program that would design the reflector so that it didn't just take the light and swoop it down at the target. It actually reproduced the photometry of the original fixture with the specular reflector. And remember, at this time, we were using fluorescent fixtures that had four T12 lamps in them, and we were moving to T8s, which were much more efficient, which were much more effective at delivering light. And I didn't know anything about any of that at the time. And one thing led to another. I became fascinated with light and lighting and how we could take light and produce the light that was required for the performance of visual tasks and put it where people really needed it to be and do it for a lot less energy and a lot less money out of pocket. And it became a fascination. And then the utility companies back in 1989, 1990, just a couple of years ago, you guys were, well, never mind. and at that time, they started giving incentives to companies that would move from the old technology, T12, to T8s. And I got sort of swept up in that. And I formed a company called Maintained Illumination. And well, actually, I formed a company before that that actually built the specular reflectors, but too much detail. We started Maintained Illumination, and I worked with a contractor and a few distributors. And what we wound up doing was putting together projects. Once I started putting together projects, I had to really learn about light and lighting because I wasn't just about selling this stuff. I didn't want to just put it in people's offices or in people's factories. I wanted to actually make a difference with how it lighted the space. So little did I know, when I created my first 8-foot, 4-lamp tandem luminaire, that I was creating a high bay luminaire for aisleways in a warehouse. And I could change the photometry of the light. Instead of a big conical circle from an HID fixture, I was actually sweeping the light down the facings of those back in 1991. Had I known what I was doing at the time, we wouldn't be having this podcast right now.
No, we would, except that you would be the richest guy in the lighting business.
You're right about that. Anyway, that's how I got started in all of this. Mm. And I went and I studied and I took IES classes. I read books, and then I started experimenting. I got meters and I started measuring, you know, wattages and measuring light output and looking for different ways of figuring this stuff out, so that when I talked to a customer, I wasn't selling them stuff. I was looking at what it was they were trying to do with the lighting and then trying to find the naughty little problems, those things that got in the way of their workforce achieving their objectives. How could we help somebody do what they did at the workstation better by making sure the light was entering the space and supporting their ability to perform the visual tasks they needed to do to help their company make a profit? That's what I've spent my entire career trying to teach, and trying to help other people.
So nothing's changed except the technology.
Correct. You still do the same thing professionally. You're just doing it with a different set of tools, a different toolkit.
Now, at what point did you start training lighting professionals? Because that's really how Michael and I know you. It's from that side. So what point did you get there?
Well, okay. So a lot of this actually started with Nell. But when I was in the field putting together projects, I actually didn't sell. I taught. I would run workshops and seminars and show people light and lighting and show them how it worked. And then I would ask them to give me problems that we could discuss while we were in the workshop. And then I would put stuff together, or I'd get them to put stuff together hands-on in the workshop. And I'd say, now, let's talk about a problem you've got in your place of business. The result of those workshops was what? I got calls to be a consultant, to come in and talk to them about their lighting, right? So I decided to take the LC exam. Linda Daniel, back in the days when she worked at the Bald Man, Bob Mangano, God rest his soul. One day she comes
R.I.P.
to me.
R.I.P. Bob Mangano.
Yeah. And she comes to me with a copy of Today's Lighting Distributor, where Gene Grassel, a former president of the association, was writing an article about the LC exam, the first LC exam. This was Labor Day, and the exam was being offered November 5th. That was the first exam. I took that first exam, and I promised that if I passed the exam, I would, I'd make a class to help other people pass it, because the content was so overwhelming. It was almost like you had to know the entire HIIS handbook. And then there were all these other things, the RPs, which I didn't even know what the heck an RP was at the time, recommended practices. I didn't know what any of the design guides or any of that stuff was at the time I took the exam. In fact, of the six categories in taking the exam, I knew survey, survey audit, and I knew operations and maintenance, and I knew I knew the audit.
We're gonna bring you back. Yeah, the LC exam is tough, Paul. That's why I never took it. So how did you come to be involved with Nailed? How did that happen?
Well, that's what I was getting to.
Okay.
All right. So I passed the exam. I passed by 1 point.
Nice.
Right. So it turns out that the board at NELD had heard that I had passed the exam, and they were wondering if I could help them study for the exam. So in order to do that, I had to write a course that would help them to do that. And in order to teach the course, I had to get it approved by the NCQLP, the National Council on the Qualification of Lighting Professions. And I got that done, and I went out and I taught six guys. Randy Johnson, I think, was one of them, and Bill Hurd and Sid Phillips, a couple of others, but these were all board members.
Those are some legends. Those are some legends you have there.
Yeah. So we taught that course. I taught it every year for a couple of years. And then one day in December 28th, 1998, I get a call from Alan Bender. He said, "We've heard about you. Like you to consider being the manager of lighting education at Phillips Lighting." I laughed. I said, "Who put you up to this? That's a joke, right? I'm a plotter from Buffalo, Kevin Hauser. doctor, PhD lighting sciences, is the current manager of lighting education at Philips. I know him. I've been taking classes from him. I would have no idea what to do. He says, well, they're trying to go in another direction, and we'd like you to consider. Long story short, March 28th, 1999, I'm sitting in Kevin Hauser's office as the manager of lighting education at Philips. And so began my career as a training professional in lighting. But it turns out, Michael, that I had been training people in lighting all the time I was building projects. It never really changed. What I've done my entire career is help people learn about new technology through facilitating a process of learning.
You know what's interesting about that, Paul? Is that in a lot of ways, Greg and I feel like we've been doing podcasts with each other since we started to go to Nailed Conventions in 2007 or 2006. Uh-huh. We've been meeting and discussing these things, and we always thought we should record this. This is really interesting stuff. So it's interesting how you come from, you know, just practicing it in the field to actually, hey, you know what, that people are interested in this.
Right.
You know, Greg, where do you think this lighting business is going? You know, we have Philips is now Signify, okay? GE's selling off their lighting division. Sylvania already has. Where is this going in the end, Paul? Like, you're a sage. You're a man of you're a wise man of the lighting business. Gandalf, you're the Gandalf of lighting. Where are we going with this thing now? Yeah, there you go.
Well, I think it's going to take some settling out. I believe Current is still around for GE. I know that the GE lighting technology side is going by the board, but Current is still around. And what I see happening is the next step is really this whole business of lighting and controls and lighting as being more than just about lighting, but being about all of these other elements that can be driven through a solid state delivery system. And whether that's going to be PoE, right? Power over Ethernet. I think that's going to be a very big deal. I think we're going to see a lot of that. We're still going to energize lighting devices. We're still going to deliver light to the work plane to support people's ability to perform visual tasks that support a company's ability to make a profit and reach their institutional goals. All of the things that all of us have been doing, some of us for decades, are going to continue to be done. But the devices, the names of the companies, the technologies, those are all going to modify, grow, and adjust as we go along. It's a very, very exciting time. And it's why in 2008, I didn't get out of the lighting business, because I was ready to. I was ready to jump out because it was just same old, same old. And then this SSL thing came along. And now I've been talking with several companies on the PoE side, and I see some really outstanding stuff on that whole realm of things. So I think fundamentally what I know about light and lighting is still going to be valuable going forward, but the way in which we deliver that light, the tools, the techniques, the technologies, that's what's going to adjust, and the names of the companies are going to change. But lighting is with us forever.
Do you feel that it's important to understand legacy technology if you're new in lighting now?
That is a terrific question.
And your answer?
Oh, you want an answer?
That would be great.
In my opinion, because we still have so much legacy technology, I believe it's important that we have a fundamental understanding of the basics of light and lighting and the basics of those technologies. Do we have to learn it to the level that we learned it back in the day? No, I don't think so. I think that's going to change too. In fact, I think LS1, when that sees its next revision, it'll see an even greater focus on the transition to solid state and PoE lighting and how they're connected. But I think you have to understand when you're going in to talk to a customer that what they're looking at is an HID system that's delivering 43 lumens per watt and that's using 435 or 460 watts to create light with a 400 watt metal halide or high pressure sodium lamp. I think you have to understand those technologies so that when you're explaining to them what the impact is of the transition, you've got the background. Now, whether you use it all the time or not, that's a whole different question. But I believe that a lighting professional needs to know that.
Now, you have a lot of passion, obviously, to provide the right light source and the right light for each application. Do you feel the majority of the industry feels that way today?
No. Unfortunately, what I see is a lot of, we used to call them station wagon lighting specialists. Uh-huh. They got it in the trunk, they pull it out, and they've got the answer. And they've never even thought to ask the right questions. And that's unfortunate because stuff gets built both with what I consider to be less than superior product and done in ways that are less than viable for the health of a business and the health of the workforce. I'm just very disappointed in that part of our business, but I don't know how you police that. I think we just got to make, and that's why I teach, because I want to make our buyers, our customers smarter so that they know the right kinds of questions to ask, so that they know what to look for in a provider. And then I'm going to make sure that the people who are out there providing these products in the marketplace, that they're as bright and talented as they can be so that they share these ideas with customers in ways that differentiate themselves in the marketplace.
But, you know, so, Paul, there was a time in LED, I think in the LED world, where the innovation or the sale was largely driven by energy savings. Okay, you had a $25 A19 replacement or a $30 LED TA tube, and you're making this energy case.
Right.
The problem now, or not the problem, or maybe where we are now is that the if you walk into my showroom, you're going to see LED bulbs for, you know, $2 Canadian, you know, three Correct. Canadian dollars. And I think the sale is largely being driven by price. And I whenever I go to shows or whenever we bring people on the show and we spoke to David Nathaniel, we spoke to different people and they're going back to saying we got to get back to quality. But I still think 90% of the sales are on price. How do you get back to quality?
I don't disagree with you. I would take exception to the fact that for the most part, when we taught in the Philips Lighting Center, we did not talk about the price of the lamp. We didn't focus primarily on the, we did a thing called the value pyramid. I wish I had a graphic here to show this, but at the bottom, if you imagine the bottom of the pyramid was price. The next level was the total cost of ownership. So selling on the value, the energy savings that went to, and the maintenance savings. And then at the top was called hobby, the human and business impacts of lighting. And one of the regional sales guys at Philips said, you know, it seems to me that wherever you start on the value pyramid, that's as high as you can go. And he was absolutely right. If you start with price, you're stuck. If you start with total cost of ownership, you're stuck. But if you start with the human and business impacts, even if you have to descend down the pyramid, which sometimes practicality requires that you do so, if you start with the human and business impacts of lighting, all of a sudden you've transformed the discussion because no longer are you talking about what that light bulb is. You're talking about why that light bulb matters. See, the what and the how
I
of
love that
lighting
you said
is
light
easy.
bulb. I love that he said light bulb.
So did Randy Johnson,
I
all the
love it. I
LCs.
love it. Light bulbs. I love it.
The what and the how of that light bulb is easy. What is it? It's a light bulb. How does it work? You can talk about it incandescent, compact fluorescent, or solid state. But why does it matter?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to jump in. Let me jump in here because we just did a podcast with Dan Ryan from Verge Sense. You met him at the convention, the recent
Sure.
convention, right? And he brought up an interesting point where he said the $3, $30, 300 pyramid. And he said, you know, on the podcast, not at the convention, but I thought that was the most interesting point he made. He said, lighting has an opportunity to go. So I think it was Jones Lang LaSalle, JLL or whatever, put out a
Yeah.
study and they said, energy and maintenance is $3 a square foot. Something else was what was $30 a square foot, Greg?
Fixed expense, maybe. I can't remember
I can't
offhand,
remember
so
exactly, but
yeah.
then productivity was
The cost,
300.
the 30, the $3 a square foot is the cost of the lighting and the energy, right? The $30 a square foot is the cost of the structure and
Oh, the
putting
capital
the building
cost. The
together,
capital cost,
capital
yes.
cost.
And
And
the
the
$300.
$300 a square foot is the cost of the people.
That's right. And what he was saying is that now, for the first time ever, this industry, this is interesting because that industry can go from the $3 range per square foot and then now talk about the $300 per square foot. If we start looking at the health effects of lighting, we look at IoT, we look at
Right.
smart lighting. Is I you know I agreed with him on the show and I thought it was my favorite podcast ever except for this one, Paul, with you. Of course, that goes without saying. But it has an opportunity to get in that $300 a square foot market. Can you see yourself teaching a class that tells people how to sell the productivity of lighting? Because I don't know anybody that knows how to do this right now.
I've been doing this for, let's see, I started in the lighting center in 99, started using Hobby in about 2000. So I probably taught it there for about 13 years, and I tried to teach it when I went over
Productivity.
to Wesco. Oh yes. I can give you several, I can give you several examples where we talk about performance and productivity. I use slightly different numbers, but it's the same principle. And if you think about hobby, right, price at the bottom is the $3, total cost of ownership is the 30, and hobby is the 300. We've been doing this for years, Michael. We teach it. And those of us who believe this stuff, yes, are there obstacles to getting this message through? Do people challenge you on it? Absolutely, people do. But the fact of the matter is that if you look, if you can work people through some basic math and through some basic office examples, you can show them how. I'll give you just. I'll do this very quickly. So I've got two cubicles next to each other. Right? 8 by 10, 80 square feet. There's two 2 by 4 troffers, one over each of the cubicles. Right? So, you know, what's the cost per square foot for the lighting? Right? Let's say it's $1 a square foot. Right? What's the cost per square foot for the payroll? Well, if you're paying somebody 30 grand plus 25% labor burden and benefits, it's about 40 grand. Now you're up to how much a square foot per person?
300 is the number I've been told.
Something, yeah, $40,000 divided by 80 square feet, sure, whatever that number is, right? Okay. And so now you begin to see the difference between the cost of the lighting and the cost of the person. So now what happens if I can get a 1% or a 2% change in performance and productivity from that individual at $500 a square foot, I think?
500. Yeah, how do you calculate it? I just calculated it. It's 500.
How do you measure that, though, Paul? How do you measure a 1% or 2%
exactly
increase?
Exactly.
Well, you know, when I would teach this, I would not ask that the question in that way. What I would try to get people to do is to say, have you ever gone into an office at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon and people are like this at their desks?
Nope.
Yes, but we've recreated that problem. We've recreated that problem. We had Dr. Arnold Wilkins come on the show, and he was talking about LED flicker. And he's saying that, you know, T8 Electronic largely eliminated that problem because he proved that the T12s were causational in eye strain and headaches and everything else. And then with T8 Electronics, when we went from 60 hertz to 25,000 hertz a second, we solved that problem. But now we may have recreated that problem with LED flicker. So there's actually a chance that some of these upgrades have reduced the productivity.
It depends on a number of different factors, not just the fact that it's LED, right? That's not, so here's my point. When we look at this, we have to look at it from the standpoint of what do we observe in the space? What do we observe when people are working in the space and they're performing those visual tasks? Most people who work in an environment like this, whether it's in a machine shop or whether it's in an office or it's in a hospital, it doesn't matter. The key thing is trying to understand what is it that helps or hinders people from performing the visual tasks. Now, I don't have the answers to all those questions, guys. I haven't studied it to any great degree. I don't know the effect of solid state lighting flicker. I don't know if that's true for all driver-based systems.
It's only some, depending on what kind of
driver it is, right? Cool. But it's certainly something that has to be looked at. It's certainly something that has.
But how do we prove? How do we prove the productivity gains? How do we?
I don't think you're gonna. I don't. If you're looking for proof, 100%. Well, this is how it is. I don't think you're gonna find it. But I think if you go into a space that has been modified from a traditional light delivery system to one that is direct indirect, one that integrates daylighting and controls, one that has appropriate color temperature for the kinds of work and the kinds of visual performance tasks that have to be performed, I think you see and experience a difference in the quality of the lighted environment that changes how people feel and behave in that environment. If somebody's looking for absolute answers, you're going to frustrate yourself. I don't believe they exist, nor do I believe they will ever exist.
Boom. Mm-hmm. Boom. That's a great answer.
Yeah, it just seems like something you can't ever really predict because every person is different and you don't know what they're how they're going to react to it. Go ahead.
Well, I think this part of it hasn't changed. Demonstrations make the difference. You have to take a small area of the space and put in the new light delivery system and give everybody a chance to work under it. And what happens in 90% of the cases, when I put in a demonstration, to show how the new light delivery system made the lighted environment better for the workforce. I close the sale.
But I think most of those gains have already been made with fluorescent. See, I think that most of the
Why do you think that?
I don't see LED light sources in their current form, whether they be purpose-built fixtures, LED tubes, LED CFL replacements, screw-in LEDs, whatever it is. I don't see them being like, for example, David Nathaniel, the president of Standard, came on the show and he was saying, well, in the past, you could take an MR16 and you could give people 50 watts at 12 degrees. You could give them 50 watts at 24 degrees. You could give them 50 watts at 28, 34, 38, whatever, 60. Or you could go 35. And the options in halogen in terms of quality of light and in terms of being able to really precisely define what you wanted was far greater. Whereas with LED, you smash a retrofit kit into the fixture. Or you put in.
But I think that's that, Michael. I think that therein lies the problem. We're looking at solid state lighting as if it were a tube replacement. Well, it's not going to change anything. You're absolutely right. That's not going to change anything. If you just simply take out and put back in, you haven't made a dent.
But that's the
But
vast
if you can
majority. That's the vast
transform,
majority.
I got that. But remember, we're lighting professionals. We're not just sellers of stuff. If we're just going to sell stuff, you're right. We're hung out to dry. But when you go in and you try to produce a light delivery system that makes a difference to the lighted environment that people are working under, then we can actually make a difference. Do we get to do this every time? No. Are we going to still have to compete on price? Yes. But if we start at the top of the value pyramid, at hobby, at the $300 a square foot, that's where we're going to get the chance to make a difference. And sooner than later, as people begin to understand that that's really the direction we should be going in, more and more people, I believe, are going to embrace that kind of change. But it isn't going to happen overnight. And it's certainly not going to happen when people say, well, I can get all the energy savings I want just by slapping this in and slapping that out. Well, great.
I do a lot of
But
that.
yeah, well,
I'm guilty. Guilty as charged.
I'm not the guy who would be teaching you that in
No,
my
for sure.
class.
No, for sure.
I would be teaching you how to do the other side and knowing, Michael, that there are times when I have to slide down the value pyramid. I get it. The reality of business and competing and making a living, I got it. But I'm not going to start there. I'm
I
going to
always felt
start at the
like,
top.
Greg, I always felt like Paul was always telling lighting distributors at Nailed, get educated, get educated, get educated,
For sure.
over and over and over and over again. And I always agree with it 100%, but I always felt like there's different kinds of distributors, Paul. And I'm the kind like you have the Randy Johnson. Let's say Randy Johnson is wouldn't want to compete with the guy. Be honest with you, I wouldn't want to compete with him in my market. Okay, he's almost like if there was a designation for lighting engineer, right, there would be a picture in the dictionary with Randy Johnson,
Yeah.
right there. Right, that's the lighting engineer. I always felt like I'm somewhere in between that and Home Depot. Like not look closer to Home Depot, but maybe 50% up the way where I don't get so into the hobby sell. I'm more in the position where I'm looking at the guy, I know what he wants. I can give him a little couple controls and some other things, but I found that a huge portion of the market is a price sale. Maybe the largest portion, maybe the overwhelming largest portion.
But that's not the question you asked a while back.
What was the question I
You
asked?
asked, how do we get people to be able to sell at that higher level?
Yeah.
And the answer to that question is by starting with hobby, by starting at $300 a square foot. That's where we have to start. The fact that sometimes we have to slide down, fine. but you can only go as high on the pyramid as you start. If you start at the bottom, you're stuck. You start at TCOO, you're stuck. You start at hobby, you got options. Gentlemen, maybe that's a good place for us to conclude our discussion this afternoon.
Thank you for coming on the
Absolutely.
show, Paul.
Hey,
Thanks,
my
Paul.
pleasure. Anytime, guys. This
Thanks,
was
Paul.
great.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
no, you know what though? It's our honor. Believe me when I say that.
Thank you.
For sure.
Appreciate it.
All right,
Thanks, Take
Paul.
care, guys.
Lumax Lighting. LumaxLighting.com, baby. LumaxLighting.com. Remember, US built, US made, US designed, US engineered, US parts, US labor, man. This is an American company. They make the fixtures here, no guff. Since 1976 in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Cost effective. They couldn't be in the business this long if they were out to lunch on price. Come on. These guys are competing with all the right stuff, right out of the USA, DLC certified, the whole nine yards. Throw up that website real quick for me, Scotty, on the Lumax Lighting website. I love that air LED. I just love the way it looks. That's a swanky looking light fixture right there, man. Advanced indirect recessed luminaire, air LED. Great name, great looking product too. Way to go, Lumax Lighting. Go to LumaxLighting.com, baby. That's LumaxLighting.com. And don't forget, this is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. That's NAILD.org. Who built that association? Who turned it into an educational powerhouse? Oh, he just was on the show. He just listened to his podcast. His name's Paul Hafner. And I'm sure after listening to that show, you're pretty inspired by him, man. He's such a great guy. We always love Paul. I love the way he doesn't take guff from anybody. He tells me straight up, tells me what to do on my own show, man. Tells me when the show is over. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. That's so Paul Hafner, though. We love you, Paul. Thanks for coming on the show, and see you around, brother. LumaxLighting.com.